of grilled chicken, some brown rice, and peas. So he kept her fed and hydrated. She drank tea. No signs of torture. None. But I've sent the contents to the lab, and we'll have a tox report shortly, I hope. The tat, the belly piercings, the third ear, and the ear cartilage piercings were done within the last 72 hours. She was alive for those. But her nails? This is a fresh mani-pedi. These nails were recently shaped. Post-mortem. Maybe somebody who worked on the dead in funeral and memorial venues. Somebody who fixed them up like they were just sleeping for the mourners. Maybe. Bad mommy. That's what he wrote, left on her. Yes, I saw the recording. She doesn't look like the standard image of mommy, right? They come in all shapes and sizes. Eve drank absently, gave a flickering thought to her own. Far from standard. I guess so. If the victim was a surrogate, we'd be looking for someone about this build, likely this coloring, with the tat, the piercings, who was in this general age range, or looked like it, around the turn of the century. She circled the other way. Or he just wanted to play with a doll and has an old-fashioned sense of style. She stopped. The neck wound and repair. No hesitation marks. One quick stroke, smooth, sharp blade, about 4 inches long. I'd look for a folding knife, a good sharp pocket knife. Now her eyes narrowed. A pocket knife. Smooth, short, straight blade. No jags, no angles. He faced her to kill her, a left to right slice, so right-handed. Nodding, she ran it through her head. Makes sense. Why would he have a knife, a sharp, sitting around anywhere near a woman he's holding against her will? Pocket knife. She pulled her own out of her pocket, hit the button to flip out the blade. But you're carrying it. You're done with her. Just take it out. It's more of the moment. She does or says something, hasn't done or said something. He's pissed and swipe, done. A single slice, no hesitation marks, so yes, it could be in the moment. The stitching now is precise, like the rest of his work. Careful and meticulous. I sent the thread to the lab. It may be upholstery thread, stronger and thicker than what you'd use to sew on a button, for instance. And the needle would be the same, thicker, likely longer than a standard sewing needle. More like what I'd use to close this Y-cut. Not medical-grade thread, but maybe some medical skills? Or sewing skills? Or, sorry for the oars, he said with a smile. Someone taking their time. Yeah. Or that. Or that. Or he's just obsessively precise. No sex, no violence, no torture. What did he want from her? What did he want with her? Maybe the obvious. A mommy. Morris laid a hand on the victim's shoulder. Now she'll never get the chance to decide if she wants to be one. No, she won't. She has family and a cohab. They'll want to see her. I'll contact them when she's ready. Okay. Thanks for the tube. Anytime. Dallas. She was left at the playground near the house. The house our friends will live in. Yeah, I'm on that. I'm sure you are. We look after strangers who become ours every day, and we look after family. If Mavis needs anything, let her know I'll be there. I will. She doesn't fit the image. She's smaller, and Christ knows what color her hair will be on any given day. And she's pregnant. But the pregnant thing makes her a mommy. He doesn't want someone else's mommy, though, does he? I don't think so. Still, I'm on it. Or would be, she told herself as she started out. She had to get to Central, set up her board and book, think. She had questions for Mira. She considered going by the lab, lighting a fire under Berensky, maybe giving Harvo a nudge. Too soon, she admitted. She'd give them 24 hours, then she'd light fires and give nudges. As she pulled into Central, Peabody tagged her. Mira can squeeze you in now if you're on your way back. I am back. She's got a short window now, otherwise I'm taking now. Eve zipped into her slot. I'll run it down for her, send her the report later. I'll tell her admin you're on your way. Hey, ask about the baby. What baby? The admin's new grandbaby. Make nice, Peabody said before Eve could object or complain. And she may make nice next time you need a window with Mira. Stupid, Eve muttered as she crossed to the elevators. Babies don't have anything to do with homicide and profiling. Unless they do, and they don't on this. Just try it. It won't hurt much. So you say. Eve cut her off and jumped in the elevator. Since she figured now meant now, she stayed on even when cops and techs and who the hell knew squeezed on. On Mira's floor, she shouldered her way through the pack and out, breathed in clean air as she moved quickly to Mira's outer office and the dragon at the gates. Mira's admin sat imperiously as always at her desk, earlink on as she worked on whatever the hell she worked on. She shifted her icy gaze up, pinned Eve with it. Dr. Mira has only 20 minutes. I'll make it quick. She started to go straight in, then mentally rolled her eyes, ground her teeth. Anyway, congratulations on the grandchild thing. The ice melted into a kind of dreamy mist. Thank you. She lifted a framed photo from her desk. Isn't she gorgeous? Eve saw what appeared to be the result of a strange mating of a trout and a very angry, possibly constipated old man. She said, wow, so precious. 20 minutes, she repeated, but the misty dreamy remained. Eve stepped in where Mira sat behind her own desk, keyboarding. She held up a finger. I need one more minute to finish answering this. Have a seat. Because she wasn't ready to sit, Eve just stood, studying the shelves that held Mira's memorabilia, awards, photos. More babies and kids, but none with that fishy newborn look. Sorry, Mira said after a moment. It's already a day. No problem. And I appreciate you fitting me in. You wouldn't ask if you didn't need. Rising, Mira walked to her auto chef on her high, skinny heels, the color of perfectly cooked salmon. They matched her suit with its knee-skimming skirt that showed off excellent legs. She wore a triple chain with pale blue stones that exactly matched the buttons of the suit jacket. It never failed to astonish and baffle Eve that anyone managed that coordination, especially as consistently as Charlotte Mira. She expected to smell the lightly floral tea Mira preferred, and instead scented good, strong coffee. Coffee. Eve almost sighed it. I need it. With a smile, Mira handed Eve a cup before she took a seat in one of her blue scoop chairs. As I said, A day. And you're having one yourself. A body, Peabody said, left in the playground near the new house. Have you spoken with Mavis? Not yet. It's on the list. Which is long. It is. I'm just back from the field, so haven't written it up yet. So you'll tell me. Female, Caucasian, 26, a bartender walking the few blocks home after closing. Still standing, she ran through it all as the department's top profiler listened. She pulled out her link, called up the crime scene record to show Mira the body, the message left. It looks like it was written with a crayon. The lab'll confirm. Nodding, Mira studied the images. The look. The way he dressed her, styled her. It reminds me of my mother's sister, my aunt, back when I was a child. Photos of her from that time frame. She was, according to my mother, a bit of a wild child. Morris said the clothes were outdated. Yes, to my eye as well. You'd be two who know. With a smile, Mira brushed back a wave of her mink-colored hair. It's a hard look, again to my eye. The makeup, the hairstyle. Hard rather than edgy or overtly sexy. Certainly not traditionally or classically maternal. At the same time, it's also very exacting. A lot of care went into creating this look. It mattered. She, the woman he or she sought to recreate, mattered. There's as much love here as hate. Maybe more. He kept her for 10 days. Had to have chosen her, known her basic routine. All that takes time and care. It does, Mira agreed. She fit the outline, either physically or by lifestyle. She worked in a bar. Perhaps the one she represented worked in a bar, or worked nights. Certainly something about the victim sparked this need to take her, keep her, try to make her into the original. The mother. Almost certainly the killer's mother, or mother figure. Mira sat back again, sipping her coffee as she chose her words. No sexual aggression or rape. No physical violence beyond the abduction and the killing blow. I agree she must have been drugged when the tattoo and the piercings were done, and these markings will reflect the original. A woman, most likely, at least in her upper 70s, to fit the fashion he chose, potentially older. She's either dead or has broken ties with the killer. Assuming mother, the killer would be at least late 50s. He shows control, patience, organized behavior, maturity. If this is his first and you'll check for like crimes, there's a trigger. A betrayal by the mother figure, her death, her abandonment, remarriage, something that drove him to need to replace and recreate. She didn't measure up. The victim. Or he killed her to punish the original because she did, in his mind, measure up. Why sew up the killing wound and hide it under the ribbon? It's all so tidy, Mira added. A hard look, but so clean, so perfect. There may be remorse here, but it strikes me as more likely. Leaving an open wound is incomplete, untidy, and even the stitches would spoil the image. He's angry with her. She's bad, but she still represents mother. Precise, controlled, a perfectionist, with the maturity to plan it out, but the lettering on the sign. Like a kid's, not precise. the child in him, the angry child, lashed out. The mature tidied it all up. He's psychotic, with a mother obsession that drove him to, in his mind, matricide. He'll kill her again. Almost certainly. The love, hate, the rage, need, all must be met. The killer's a man or woman, likely at least 55, and I think more likely at least 60. And his mother figure was Caucasian, blonde at the time he's recreating, with a build that closely matches the victim's. She liked to party, or he wants to see her that way. He remembers her from childhood that way. He wants her back as much as he wants to destroy her. He didn't give her a wedding ring. People don't always go for those. More so, much more so, in the era I believe he's recreating. Unmarried woman, widowed or divorced. The father isn't important to him. It's only her. It's only them. He won't have siblings, or had no relationship with them, has none now. The killer isn't in a relationship, lives alone. He may have a skilled job. If indeed the killer is male, he's asexual or impotent. I'm leaning male. Mira set aside her coffee, recrossed her legs. Why? From what I've seen, mothers and daughters have, generally, a different sort of dynamic than mothers and sons. A guy's more likely, it seems to me, to deify or demonize the mother figure. I feel like if the killer was the daughter, or saw herself that way, there would have been some violence on the Vic. You know, you ruined my life, you bitch. And there wouldn't have been so much effort put in to make her look, you know, pretty. Mira sat back. I completely agree. I wouldn't rule out the female. And there I'd look for someone the people who think they know her describe as meek and unassuming, quiet, diligent. In either case, this is someone scarred in childhood who's carried those scars and, again, if this is the first kill, recently experienced a trigger. Okay. Talking it through gave Eve a picture. Not clear and exact, not yet, but a picture. I'll get you the report, the record, the lab results as they come in. It's fascinating. Tragic for all involved, but fascinating. The power of motherhood, for good or ill. Mira's soft blue eyes held on Eve's. You understand that? Yeah. The last thing I'd want to do is recreate mine. She started to push to her feet, then stopped. She didn't abuse the kid, the killer. If she had, he'd have paid her back. There'd be signs of payback. Physical abuse or sexual abuse. Abuse, if it applies, may have been emotional. Yeah, there's that. Now she stood. I appreciate the time. I'm glad I had it. It is fascinating, Eve. You'll search for more missing women. On the list, she said. She took the glides up for the breathing room and thinking time. She needed to dive into every detail of the victim's appearance, every step her killer had taken to create her. Missing persons, female, between 20 and 30 to be safe, she considered. In the last month, to fully cover it. Start with a search using the victim's basic physicality. Finding the mother, the original, had to be one of the top priorities. She had some ideas how to start on it, but it would take time. If the killer abducted another surrogate, time narrowed. And on a personal level, she needed to talk to Mavis. She smelled the brownies the minute she swung into homicide. And there, in her bullpen, her damn good cops, including her partner, scarfed down brownies as Nadine First, best-selling writer, Oscar-winning screenwriter, and, more relevant, award-winning on-air reporter for Channel 75, leaned her well-toned butt on Peabody's desk. I assume the population of New York, including all tourists and visitors, is alive and well. Jenkinson, her senior detective, brushed a crumb from his atomic yellow tie. Eve found herself surprised one of the grinning green frogs hopping over it hadn't flicked out a tongue to capture it first.
Just a real quick break, boss. They're double fudge.
Break's over. Nadine, I don't have time for you. Peabody, my office. Peabody hustled after her, but Eve heard the bright click of Nadine's skyscraper heels in pursuit. Busy, Eve snapped without looking around. Take off before I charge you with bribing police officers.
Give me 1 minute, and don't close the door in my face. 1 minute, and I'm gone if that's what you want. Either way, you get the brownie I saved you in my purse.
The scent of chocolate could have weakened the strongest spine, but the friendship weighed on the scale. The friendship existed because while Nadine would pursue a story like a dog pursues a rabbit, she cared about truth. Let's see the brownie. Nadine reached into a stop sign red bag the size of Brooklyn and took out a little pink bakery box. Eve opened it, nodded at the brownie within, then set it on her desk.
1 minute. Clock's ticking. Mavis, I sat on that same damn bench with you at that playground after Mavis gave me a tour of that big, rambling, strange, and wonderful house she and Leonardo, Bella, and the new one when it gets here are making into a home, where Peabody and McNabb are making theirs. He left that woman's body on that bench where Bella's played and will play. They're my family, too.
There was truth, Eve acknowledged, absolute and pure.
Okay, then get out and let me do my job. Give me something. Not to air, Nadine said quickly. I hit the story this morning. My first day back, by the way, post-book tour, and I've got enough for a follow-up report.
Which, Eve thought, explained the camera ready. Streaky blonde hair, carefully styled, perfect makeup, the sharp white suit, the red and white striped heels.
I can help. You know I can. I'll give you a blanket off the record until you give me the go. I want a one-on-one when it's appropriate, and I'll hound you until I get it, but this isn't about the story. Give me something I can dig into, something I can get my team to research. We're good, you know we are.
Eve eased back on the corner of her desk. I'm gonna send you a picture of a tattoo. The killer inked the victim a couple days before he killed her. Lower back. We're looking for a woman with that tattoo in that place. A woman between 20 and 30, white, blonde, about 5'5 and 125. I'll give you the ID shot of the vic. There'll be a resemblance. The tat may have been done in the last decade of the 20th century or any time since.
What is it? The tat.
Butterfly.
That's it? Jesus, Dallas, do you know how many people get butterfly tats? You want easy or you want to help?
Nadine let out a huff of breath.
Send me the pictures. We'll get started.
She'll have a navel piercing, Eve added. 3 piercings in the left ear, 2 lobe, 1 cartilage. Remember,
It's most probable the victim bore some resemblance, build, coloring, same age range. All right, that's helpful. And without a lot of luck, this won't be quick, but we'll push. You think the killer more or less replicated someone. Mavis isn't at all physically like the victim. No, but I'll talk to her anyway. Okay. I've got to get to 75. Do the follow-up. I'll start the team on this. I'll be working it, too. She looked at Peabody, smiled. It's a great house. An original. Or it sure as hell will be when you're done with it. I'm in love with it. Don't blame you a bit. I'll be in touch, she said to Eve, and started out. Nadine? Eve waited a beat. Thanks. No thanks when it's family. Peabody cleared her throat after Nadine left. I only had half a brownie, 'cause loose pants, and because she had just enough time to tell me she wanted to help before the rest of the bullpen swarmed. If she finds the original bad mommy with what I gave her, it's a miracle. But she may pull it off. We also search. I want you to start a search for missing women using the Vic as a template. Stretch it to between 20 and 30 and in the last month, and contact Norman. I did. He wants to come in, talk face to face. He'll bring the files. Give him the go there. I'm going to run like crimes, but if he did this before in New York, we'd already know. Not impossible, he did it elsewhere, so we'll nail that down. He fed her, Peabody. A few hours before he killed her, she had a solid, healthy meal. No signs of sexual abuse or torture. She needed to put up her board, start her book. But she thought about mothers and daughters, mothers and sons. What did she know, really? Observations, not personal experience. Personal experience didn't count when your mother had been a monster. Describe your mother, she said to Peabody. Not physically. What's the first word that comes to mind? Love. She loves. We love her back. Next word. Strong. She's loving, yeah, but she's strong. Tough when she needs to be. Third and final word. Tolerant. Peabody's shoulders lifted and fell. Tolerance is a basic element of being a free ager. That's offset by the strong. No bullshit from us kids, but tolerant of personal choices that cause no harm to others. Would you use those same three in that order for your father? Love first, tolerant next. And he's strong, sure, but the top three? I'd probably say playful. He's just cuddly. How does that help? Just trying to form directions. Male or female? I lean, as does Mira, toward male. Potentially asexual or impotent. I bet you fought with your mother more than your father. Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, like, lipstick and mascara aren't tools of Satan. And at 13, don't need the details. Your brothers probably fought more with your dad. Probably. I mean, free agers, so disputes are usually talked to death or solved through mediation or meditation. But yeah, my brothers would claim Dad was harder on them than my sister and me. And I can attest, Mom was harder on my sister and me. But piddly stuff. And I bet if I did a survey in the bullpen, the percentages would agree. Not 100%, but that's the more general dynamic. Okay, get out, get started.
Let me know when Detective Norman gets here. Alone, she started the search for light crimes first. That could run while she set up the rest. Then she contacted Detective Yancey, the police artist she respected most, to ask for a meeting. Finally, she set up her board, adding Morris's report when it came in, the sweeper's report. And with that visual aid, she started her murder book. Once done, she sent copies to Mira and to her commander. It had to be done, she told herself, and, taking out her link, tagged Mavis. Today's hair was a soft sort of lavender and mad curls. Solid Joy all but leaped through the screen and kissed Eve on the mouth. Somewhere in the background, somebody banged. Saws buzzed. Hey, Dallas! Things are happening! Rourke's gonna try to come by later. You should too! Maybe. Mavis, Trina just dropped by. Bellamina's showing off her room. Some of the crew's over in Peabody and McNabb's place. Things are happening there, too. It's a mega mag mutual happening. I bet. Mavis, you have your serious face on. Something's happening there, too, and it's not good. You haven't heard any media reports today. Who's got time for all that when it's all this? This is the really good stuff. What's the bad? I don't want you to worry. Shit. Oh, shit. Maybe me and number two should sit down. This is just a precaution, okay? A woman was killed, and her body left on a bench at the playground. The one near you.
Oh, no. Oh, God. When?
Last night. Well, early this morning. It's my case, Mavis, and Peabody and I are all over it. I've even got Nadine doing some research.
The poor woman.
Mavis's eyes, dyed a deep purple, filled.
Was she a neighbor?
She worked the stick at Arnold's, lived a few blocks from there.
I know that bar. It's classy.
He wanted a type, and he may want another. You're not the type. She thought of Trina, the much dreaded stylist. Neither's Trina if she's coming and going a lot. But I want you to take precautions. Don't take Bella to that playground until I have more on this. And you could bring in the security detail you use for gigs. They're good. Just a precaution.
What did he do to her?
No, don't tell me. Closing her eyes, she breathed deep.
I have to think of number two.
No bad vibes allowed.
I think we've got most of the security installed that McNabb and Rourke worked out, but I'll ask Rourke when he gets here later.
Good. That's good. Just don't go out walking, you and Bella, by yourselves right now.
You think he lives around here?
Not panic, which Eve had feared, but icy anger. I don't know. But he spent enough time in that neighborhood to choose the dump site. And the bar and the Vic's place aren't that far. I need some time to work the case.
And not worry about me. Don't. We'll be careful. Nobody's going to touch my babies. And number two goes wherever I go, right? Get the bastard, Dallas.
Count on it.
I do. Come by if you can. We're going to be here all day.
I'll try, and I'll keep you in the loop as much as I can. The faintest smile crossed Mavis's face.
He sure made a mistake using our playground. Pissed off Lieutenant Dallas.
Damn right. I'll talk to you later.
Cha!
She sat a minute, ridiculously relieved Mavis hadn't fallen apart. And equally relieved to be sure her oldest friend would take every precaution. Off the list, she thought. Then she rose, rolled her shoulders. She programmed coffee, sat again. And nibbling on her brownie, drinking her coffee, she studied her board. 4. Before. She didn't know where she was or how she got there. She remembered nothing before waking on the ground, surrounded by trees, with the sun pushing through the thick canopy of leaves and covering her like a blanket soaked in hot water. And shivering, shivering, despite that smothering blanket of heat. Everything hurt, and her head pounded sickly even as her stomach churned. When she pushed up to her hands and knees, her pounding head spun and her stomach revolted. Sweat slicked her skin as she vomited up the vial. Weeping, she crawled away, then just curled into a ball, waiting to die. But she didn't. Chills racked her so her teeth clacked together, and when they passed, more sweat poured, ran down her body like a river. The sickness cycled back until there was nothing left, and she lay exhausted, throat burning. And somehow she slept. She woke, burning with fever, racked with chills, and this time prayed to die. Without sense or purpose, she managed to gain her feet, took a few stumbling steps. When she fell, she waited for the sickness to come again. But there was only pain and that terrible heat. So she pushed to her feet again. She saw nothing to tell her where she was, which way to go, so she walked blindly. She couldn't say how long she walked, forced time and again to stop and rest. She feared she walked in circles. She saw birds, squirrels, knuckles of trees poking out of brown water, and the things that swam in it silently. But not another human being. She knew she was a human being, a girl, a woman. But beyond that, she had nothing to anchor her. She didn't remember driving into the lake, or the sudden wild panic that had her fighting her way out of the submerged car, swallowing water, thrashing her way to the surface. She certainly didn't remember a little boy left sleeping and alone in front of an empty church. She was alone, and too sick, too tired to think of before. She fell asleep again and woke in the dark, woke freezing this time. The air, so thick, seemed to clog her lungs so her breathing wheezed. And the wheezing led to horrible spells of agonizing coughing. Insects buzzed around her, biting until every inch of her skin burned and itched. She scratched and scratched until she bled, and the blood drew more to bite and swarm. She tried calling out, but her voice was a croak, no louder than the frogs. She walked and wept. Walked and wept, and finally just walked, shuffling like a zombie and jolting at each sound. The hoot of an owl, the rustle of leaves. She waited for something to leap out of the dark and consume her. She thought she heard something else. Something familiar. A car. She knew there were cars in the world. She knew she wore red sneakers, sneakers coated in mud. She knew, because she'd run her hands over it, she wore her hair short. But she couldn't bring an image of herself into her mind. If she had a mirror, she knew what a mirror was. Would she know herself? She tried to walk in the direction she thought she'd heard a car. Someone would help. If she could find someone, someone would help. Water. Someone would give her water. She was so thirsty. She had no sense of time, of distance. She followed snatches of moonlight. She knew the moon, the sun, flowers, buildings, trees. Why were there so many trees? She knew cats and dogs and hands and feet. Her feet ached and ached. Her head felt as big as the moon and pulsed with pain. Delirious, she muttered to herself things she remembered and found the word for the body of water she nearly fell into. Swamp. She wanted to drink it, but knew the things that swam in swamps. Alligators. Snakes. She walked the other way. What did it matter? She'd walk until she died. And then, like a miracle, she stumbled out onto a road. She knew what a road was, and cars traveled on them. She walked, limping now, as her shoes rubbed blisters on her feet. But no car traveled this road. Maybe she was the only person left in the world. Maybe there had been a nuclear war. She knew what that was, sort of. Everything blew up. But there was still a road and trees. As dawn began to break, she gave up, gave in to exhaustion, and simply dropped down on the road. She curled into herself and let the darkness come. On his way home from a graveyard shift at the ER, Dr. Joseph Fletcher had the top down, the radio blasting, both ploys to keep him alert after a long, hard night. He loved his work, had always wanted to be a doctor, and he'd chosen emergency medicine. But there were nights he wondered why he hadn't listened to his parents and gone into private practice. Of course, he knew why. He helped more people, often desperate people, on any given night than he might have in a week in a posh office. He was thinking about a long, cool shower and his big, soft bed when he rounded the final curve before home and nearly ran over the figure crumpled in the road. He had to slam the brakes, swerve. He nearly lost control of the BMW Roadster he'd treated himself to when he got his degree. Gravel spit from the wheels when he hit the shoulder, and he fishtailed but managed to stop without ending up in the gully. Grabbing his medical bag, he was out of the car in seconds and running. When he dropped down beside her, he feared the worst, but he found a pulse, and when he began to check for injuries, she stirred. She opened her eyes, bloodshot, swollen, and glazed with shock. Her voice came out in a hoarse croak, but he heard her. She said, "Help me." Now. Eve read the tox report on her victim and got a picture of those last hours. As she copied it to Mira, added it to her book and board, Peabody buzzed through. "Detective Norman's here, Lieutenant." She considered her office, the single, ass-biting visitor's chair, and decided to give Norman a break. "Let's take it to the lounge. I'm right behind you." After a last look at her board, she started out. "One second, LT." Santiago hustled over to her. "If you can sign off on this, Carmichael and I can close it out." She scanned the report on the suspect in a bludgeoning death, her spouse, and her confession there too. Looks like good work between brownie breaks. She scrawled her signature and kept going. She found Peabody and Detective Norman already at a table with crap coffee. A scatter of other cops took their break or used the quieter space for work. Norman looked young. Since she'd already looked him up, she knew he was only a couple years older than Trueheart, her youngest detective. He had smooth, golden-brown skin, deep-set dark eyes that spoke of some Asian in his DNA. He wore his hair close-cropped with hints of gold among the black. He had a skinny build inside a black suit and a dull gray tie knotted at the base of his long neck. As well as young, Eve thought he looked miserable. She sat. Detective Norman, thanks for coming in. I'm Lieutenant Dallas. He offered his long, slender hand and a solid grip with it. Lieutenant, I brought all the files on Lauren Elder. I was working with Detective Marlborough on this case. She's senior, but she's on vacation. Okay. Why don't you just run it through for us? Yes, sir. Roy Marsden, who identified himself as Elder's cohab, reported her missing on the morning of May 29th. Detective Marlborough and I caught the case, and though it had been less than 24 hours, and Elder an adult, Marsden expressed urgency. Elder wasn't answering her link, and he checked with her co-workers. I have a list in the files, and her family. He'd contacted her friends and had also contacted local hospitals. He paused to gulp at some coffee. We interviewed him, and there was no indication he and Elder had any relationship difficulties. This was confirmed by interviews with neighbors, co-workers, family. Her co-worker Buddy Wilcox was the last to see her at approximately 02:37 when they closed the bar, Arnold's, where they both worked. The door cam confirms both of them exiting at this time. He stated Elder intended to go straight home, indicated no distress, and was in fact joking with him as they closed for the night. They stood on the sidewalk for a minute, according to his statement, talking. Then she walked in the direction of her residence, while he traveled in the other direction to catch the subway to his own. We have security footage of him on the train platform, time stamped at 02:37, and getting on the train 2 minutes after. He let out a long breath. We concluded Elder had been abducted between her workplace and her residence. Her routine was the same when she worked the night shift. She traveled the same route and, in general, between 02:20 and 02:30. You concluded it would have been possible for someone to note this routine. Yes, sir. We interviewed former relationships, bar regulars, neighbors, and canvassed her route. The thing is, Lieutenant, there was nothing. We looked into finances, her families, her cohabs, but even if this had been for ransom, there wasn't really enough there. The cohabs' families got some, but why take her? Nobody saw her after she left the bar. We didn't find a trace of her. Our EDD tracked her link from the bar to 16 West 17th, a half block from her apartment building. Yes, sir. It went dead, just dead, so they concluded her abductor disabled it. But he didn't discard it, or if he did, someone picked it up before we caught the case. No, sorry. Before Marsden walked the route, which he did the next morning when he woke to discover she hadn't come home, when she didn't answer his tags, and he was unable to connect. Smart. Close to home. She was less likely to be on any sort of alert that close to home. That's what Marlborough said. She was young and pretty, so we pushed at the idea of snatching her for the sex trade. We pursued that, and honestly, sir, every line we could think of. Marlborough figured she was a little over the edge age-wise for the sex trade. They tend to like them younger, But we pushed. Marlborough told me, before she left, we'd probably never find the body. Now he stared down at his hands. But you did. Sorry. It's my first homicide. I kept hoping, even though you know the odds, she'd just turn up. I keep thinking there had to be more we could have done. It's not my first homicide, Detective. I'm gonna tell you that you did everything you could. He looked up, big, expressive eyes in a thin face. Do you know why? Why her, especially? The why is most likely her general physical appearance and age range and that routine. The killer didn't luck upon her. He stalked her. We looked into that. Nobody we interviewed saw any strange vehicles in the area. No one stated she'd complained about being followed or harassed. He's probably been in the bar a time or two. Not enough to be a regular, not enough to be noticed. His vehicles, likely nondescript but higher end. It blended with the neighborhood. He was ready for her, and knows enough to have disabled her link rather than just tossing it. Planning, Eve thought again. Control and planning. He took it, she continued. Leave no trace. It's possible she knew him, but with what we've learned, the possibility of that's low. He drugged her. Even on the night he killed her, he mixed a trank, basically a soother in her tea. He kept her restrained and submissive. You did your job, Detective. Is there anything I can do? I know I don't work murders, or not yet, but if there's legwork or drone work, I can do it on my own time. He should let it go, Eve thought. But it was damn hard to let go of your first. I'm gonna copy you on our file. We're looking into other missing persons, looking at women who have a similar appearance and age range. If your lieutenant signs off, you could help with that. I'll have him contact you, and I appreciate it. He passed her a disc, sealed. That's everything. I haven't contacted Marlborough. It's her first real break with her family in almost a year. But if you think, if we need her input, I'll let you know. Okay. Thanks. I'd better get back. Eve sat where she was as he walked out. He'll be a good cop if he sticks, she said to Peabody. Anyway, we know the abduction spot, and that's new. We'll take another look at it. But I've got Yancey coming in.
Yancey?
Yeah, walk and talk, Eve said as she rose. Keep pushing the missing persons for now, but I'm going to clear it with Norman's LT and let him hit that area. But tag McNabb and ask him if disabling a link is enough to kill any chance of tracing it and how that works.
Sure.
Because here's the thing. There are recyclers along that route. Why not park near one, disable the Vic, then toss the link into a recycler? I'm betting the link would have been crushed before morning. And even if it wasn't, it would be by the time the cops started looking.
Maybe he did know her and contacted her on it.
And we won't dismiss that. But what are the odds he knew her, knew how to contact her, and she fit all his requirements? I don't buy anyone being that lucky. We'll see when the recyclers along her route run and when the contents are picked up. She saw Yancey get off the elevator across from Homicide. With his dark curls and vidstar face, he looked more like an artist than a cop. Eve knew he hit both on the mark. Good timing.
Soonest I could break loose, he told her.
Works. As she turned into the bullpen,
Jenkinson and his eye-watering tie crossed to her. We maybe got a break in the Du Bois hit. Got a woman coming in, says she saw the whole thing, and she'll spill it for protection and immunity. Where's she been for the last 3 days? She says hiding out. Reinecke ran her. She's a former high-rent LC who got booted when she failed the standard illegals screening. See what she's got. You better get a prosecutor on tap in case. Got that covered. His brother did him, Dallas. I know it in my bones. But he's a slippery bastard. She sounded scared enough, so maybe she's got something that'll give us a better grip. If she does, we'll need a safe house for her. I'll clear it. Keep me up. She led the way into her office. Rich Wheeler Dealer ends up stabbed a couple dozen times in his fancy penthouse. Private entrance and elevator. Security feeds taken. Set up to look like a botched burglary, but it comes off as a botched botch, and Jenkinson liked the brother for it from the jump. Only he's alibied tight. Smug with it. Alibis his wife and a couple of other assholes. Anyway. She shoved her hands through her hair. Peabody, coffee.
How do you want it, Yancey? Peabody asked him.
If it's the real stuff, black's good. Here's our Vic. Eve gestured to her board. You can see the killer went heavy on the hair and facial enhancements. That's post-mortem. Our angle is he picked her up and, after holding her for 10 days, killed her, then made her up to represent someone else. His or her mother or mother figure. Pretty young for it. Yeah, so mother from back a ways. Mira dated her outfit to around the turn of the century or a few years after. That confirms Peabody and Morris's fashion take. Okay. Thanks, he added when Peabody handed him a mug of coffee. So, with this line, Mom could be hitting 80 or so. If she's still alive, yeah. To pursue this angle, we need a better fix on the mother figure. ID her. We have a strong shot at IDing the killer. You want me to use the victim as the base, age her to around 80, give you the most likely image. I'm not going to promise face recognition on it. All kinds of variables, Dallas. She could have had work done, or lived the kind of life that leaves marks. Or she could have died 60 years ago, Eve put in, or any time between then and now. I'm using the current image to try to match the potential subject at this age range, but that's before universal ID. We've got to use driver's licenses, passports, and it's going to be a slog. She might have had neither. There's a tat. Also winked after abduction. So we have that identifying mark on the mother figure. What I want, if you can do it, is age reproduction analyses. A decade by decade from this point to now. Best probable. Huh. Sipping coffee, he moved closer to the board. Interesting. I need more photos. Different angles. Vids would be good. It wouldn't hurt to get some of the victim younger, too. Even with that, it'll take a while. I can comp generate a lot of it, work with a holo for a 360, but I'll need to finesse that, punch it up for any chance at facial recognition. Even then. But I can give you the best approximation. We'll get more pictures, some vids. Peabody, I'll contact her family, her cohab. Whatever they've got, have them send to me and to Yancey. On it. How long's a while? Eve asked Yancey when Peabody went out.
I've got a couple things to clear up, but I can probably start on it before end of shift.
I've got to figure a week, 3 days in a squeeze, to give you everything you want, and that's if I don't have too much else land on my desk.
How about you start at the high end, the oldest version first? I haven't yet found any light crimes, nothing that matches this. Mira figures a trigger. The mother figure let him down, crossed him, or maybe died on him, and he's trying to replace her with this image.
Young. Kind of glamorous.
Glamorous?
To a kid, right?
He'd have been a kid if this was his actual mom, given her age and how long ago. All the sparkly stuff. Top, shoes, the makeup and all.
Seems like a kid might think of that as glamour.
Fancy. Shiny.
She flashed back to playing with her mother's makeup.
Pretty colors, shiny.
And getting knocked on her ass for it.
Yeah, I get that. I'll keep working the lower age range. You start with the high. And I appreciate anything you can get me.
Frosty assignment. Never tried anything quite like it.
He handed her the empty coffee mug with his dreamy smile. I'll go clear up my currents and get started.
When Yancey left, she sat down and considered that memory flash.
What had she been? 4, 5, 6, when Stella walked out on Richard Troy the last time? She couldn't be sure. Those memories remained vague. But had she thought Stella pretty? Even glamorous?
Probably.
What else had she to compare?
Had she had shiny clothes?
Probably.
She remembered the smells, sex and smoke, and the smell of the powders and paints, like candy.
Perfume.
She'd smelled perfume on the body.
So he remembered the smells too.
Childhood smells.
Had he lived his life with this woman? Or had she walked out on him like Stella had on her?
She rose, paced to her skinny window.
In New York? Or somewhere else?
Bad mommy. Hadn't Stella been her template for motherhood? Stella and the array of foster mothers that followed for a very long time?
Bad mommy would have been her judgment, too.
Had the killer been in the foster system?
Another angle, but one she couldn't begin to dive into without a better time frame.
And she'd started out in Dallas.
Like the killer, she'd ended up in New York.
No way to know yet where the killer had started his journey.
The next thought had her heading out of her office. I'm going up to EDD, tapping Feeney, she told Peabody.
I'm on with Norman, Peabody jiggled her link. We may have a couple missing persons who fit the basics.
Nail them down and we'll take them when I get back.
Taking the glides, she thought it through as she went. Another long shot, maybe, but worth pushing.
Once she got this rolling, she'd get back in the field, check out these other missing women, hit all the victims' contacts. Hair salon, health clinic, dentist, the shop she frequented regularly. Someone might have noticed something.
She walked into the crazed and colorful world of EDD. It was Jenkinson's ties on steroids.
Though she didn't see McNabb bouncing in his cube, she saw plenty of others in equally wild gear, bopping and hip swiveling as they worked. She turned toward what she knew would be the brown, baggy calm of Feeney's office. found it empty.
Hey, Dallas!
She looked around and nearly didn't recognize him. The moment's blankness might have been caused by the blinding purple baggies and the exploding aurora borealis on his shirt. He'd let his hair grow long enough so he could pull it back in a stubby tail and had streaked the blonde with spring grass green. Jamie Lingstrom, Feeney's godson, and the kid, well, college kid now, who had the distinction of being the only person she knew who'd ever, almost, gotten through Rourke's home security. Is it something in the air up here, she wondered, that turns colors nuclear? Energy boost.
Sure.
What are you doing here?
Summer intern. Just grunt work, but it's a start.
He looked around EDD as if he'd entered paradise. I rotate. 2 days a week here, 3 with Rourke. Next week, reverse it.
Rourke? You're interning with Rourke?
Low rung, but it's ice supreme. Best of both worlds. She eyed him. Getting a leg up in both so you can straddle them. She had to admire the strategy. Smart.
Gotta explore to know where to plant the flag, check me.
So, if you're looking for the cap, he and McNabb are in the field.
You got something I can
calendar, she said, naming another detective she knew and had worked with. She's buried right now. Jamie shifted his weight, subtly, to block Eve.
I just finished with the cap laid on me, so I can take what you've got.
She considered the fact that what she wanted done equaled the gruntiest of grunt work. The work of an apprentice drone. He fit the bill.
Where's your ring in this circus?
Down around here. He led the way through the maze, did a fist bump, finger wiggle with a female with a cascade of blue braids, and ended up in a cube so small and tight, if she'd tried to squeeze in with him, she'd have had to bring herself up on inappropriate conduct charges. I need a long-range ID search.
I'm your man.
By default. And when Feeney gets back, you clear this with him. Female, Caucasian, no age range at this time. I have an identifying mark. I want you to use that data, check criminal records. You're going back to the year 2000. No, make it 1990.
His eyes widened. No bull?
No bull. Start in New York.
Start?
Yeah. Start in the city, then the boroughs, then the state. You don't get a hit, move on.
To what?
Another state. She pulled out her PPC, ordered up the photos she wanted. What's your code?
No, here, just copy it over yourself.
He took her handheld.
Dallas, she looks pretty dead.
She is. I'm not looking for her, but who she represents to the person who killed her. She hesitated, then reminded herself she'd connected with Jamie not so much through Feeney as through Alice. His sister. His murdered sister. So she ran through the basics.
Butterfly tat. That's a solid. Okay, I'm all over it and back again.
Faster than she could have thought it, he transferred the photos to his unit. And looked, Eve thought, not daunted by the impossibility of the assignment, but energized.
Clear it with Feeney, she repeated as she took back her PPC.
No prob. I got this. Yo to Rourke. Yeah. Even as she turned away to escape the carnival, Jamie was bopping to the beat.
5. Back in the bullpen at Peabody's desk,
Eve studied the two missing women's data. Anna Hobe, age 24, single, worked at Mike's Place, a karaoke bar, Lower West. She lived alone, in an efficiency just under 6 blocks from her workplace. 7 days missing, Eve noted. Reported by her manager when she didn't show up for work, her link didn't respond, and the coworker who talked the building super into letting her in found the apartment empty. Becca Muldoon, age 25, a dancer at Honey Pot, a Lower West Side strip joint, 8 days missing. Single, reported by roommate. We'll take Hobe, have Norman take Muldoon. We'll hit her workplace and residence. Get the files transferred. Give me 5. She went into her office, added some notes to her book. She printed out Hobe's photo, held it next to Elder's. Same coloring, a similarity in features, and from the data, likely a similarity in build. Muldoon, now, she thought as she studied that printout, she'd put closer to the bad mommy. But that came from the facial enhancements Muldoon wore in the ID shot. With a quick search, she found one of Muldoon's professional shots on her social media. Curvier, definitely bustier. Would he adjust for that? She wondered. Either way, they struck her as candidates. She pinned them up, grabbed her jacket. Let's move, Peabody, she said as she walked through the bullpen. Norman's already heading out, Peabody told her. He contacted the lead on the Muldoon case, and they're meeting up at the strip club. 8 days, Peabody added. If he grabbed her, she's running out of time. I think the probability's lower on Muldoon. Yeah, maybe he always wanted backups, alternates, but is he going to grab one right after the other? High probability, maybe, because she more closely matches what he created, her face. But her build's different. She wouldn't fit in what he dressed Elder in. Buys to fit her. Yeah, easy enough. She's got a couple of tats already. A snake, a cobra, going down her left hip, and a dragonfly on her right tit. What does he do about that? Leave them? Remove them? Just cover them up? If he's seen her in the club, he knows that. But other side, she's already got the navel piercing, which would also be in view when she's working. It caught me she looks more like what he did with Elder than Hobe does, but Hobe looks more like Elder before he worked on her. Exactly. What does he want, Peabody? Eve asked as they crossed the garage level to Eve's car. The good mommy or the bad one? Peabody considered it as she climbed in. He kills the bad mommy, so it could follow he wants the good one. It would weigh on Hobe more than Muldoon. That's how I see it. If it was only about punishment, he'd have hurt Elder, messed her up, smacked her around. He took what he wanted, and he took her after observing her, watching her routine, planning it out. If he's taken another, he did it the same way. As she drove out, pushed through traffic, Eve thought it through. That's not to say he didn't have more than one at the same time on his radar. If he's taken another, and if he hasn't, he will. He likely had a gauge on her for a while. He'd almost have to, right? If neither of these pans out, if he's still in the stalking phase, that's one thing. But if either of these, potentially both, are targets, he had to have picked them and studied them for a while. And how does he pick them? You can't pick what you don't see. We don't have a pattern yet. We're assuming one.
Though it troubled her to assume, her instincts continued to demand it.
Mavis doesn't fit the pattern, the assumed pattern.
I talked to her, Peabody added.
She said you had, and asked her to bring in her security guys. She did. And that's just a good idea, considering the proximity of the dump site to the apartment and the house. But she doesn't fit, Dallas. She's smaller, and coloring, if we take hair and eyes, Mavis is all over the place. She doesn't have a real routine, either. And she'd usually have Bella or Bella and Leonardo or Trina with her when she goes anywhere, or me and McNabb.
All true, Eve thought, and all reassuring. But she had to think on the dark side, the killing side. He knew the playground. He didn't pick the dump site on impulse. He scoped it out, or he knows it because he lives or works in the neighborhood. Add the mommy thing. She's already a mommy. Because of Bella, and she's already showing some with number two. He could have seen her, them, in that playground. And it gnawed at her, Eve admitted, gnawed away at her. What does he want? A good mommy. She fits there. She's a damn good one.
Okay, that ups my worry level. McNabb and I will stick close.
Stick close, but keep the worry level low. She doesn't fit. It's just... friends are a pain in the ass more than half the time.
Oh,
Peabody beamed a smile. That's down from what you probably thought a couple of years ago. That would have been more like 80%, not 50.
I said more than half. 80's more than 50.
Contact Hobe's building, super. Get him or her to clear us into our apartment. We'll walk our route once we check at the bar.
Already did. See, friends are handy.
Eve flicked a glance over as she rounded a turn. That would come under partner. Partners are a pain in the ass about a quarter of the time. Eve spotted a slot in a loading zone about a block from Mike's place and decided to grab it rather than take time to hunt another. She flipped on her on-duty light. Decent neighborhood, she decided when she got out. Not as quiet or high on the scale as Elders.
More crowded, dingier, Peabody agreed. Not as close to home, she added.
A solid walk from Elders. But if you're hunting the area, this fits. She paused at a crosswalk as vehicular traffic pushed by and pedestrian traffic crowded in.
Maybe bars are part of it. If there's a pattern, bars might be part of that. Maybe the mother worked at a bar.
Worked at one, Eve agreed, or spent a lot of time drinking in them. When the light changed, they joined the flood. According to the report, Hobe worked till 12:50 or clocked out at 12:50. She walked a few blocks with a coworker, the same one who checked her apartment. Coworker peeled off to go another half block south to her residence. It was raining, so they were walking fast. Hobe's building doesn't have door cams, but she would need to code in. She didn't. Eve stopped in front of Mike's place. It boasted a bright red door and a wide glass window filled with neon. The name of the bar, a figure of some guy with a mic and an arm raised. Under him, it announced, "Karaoke, nightly." Eve considered working in a karaoke bar versus getting eaten by sharks. The sharks came close to winning. She stepped inside, relieved the nightly hadn't yet begun.